You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast, brought to you by William Hill. Sam Norris and Andrew Mount joining you on this edition to look ahead to the racing from Ascot and York on Saturday. What a fantastic day it promises to be. King George the VI and Queen Elizabeth Day at Ascot, of course. And you'll hear all the action live from 1:40pm on Racing Radio with Luke Elder, James Millman and Rory Delaghi in the studio, bringing you all the racing from indeed Ascot and York. We've also got Chester, Newmarket and Newcastle in the afternoon, with Lingfield and Salisbury filling the evening burst. Plenty to come then, but first things first, it's a very warm welcome to the podcast to Andrew Mount. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Sam. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Yourself?
Yes, can't complain. Probably will, but no one would listen.
Yeah, indeed. That is a sad fact of life. Enjoying the racing over the last few days? We're finally starting to see the ground turn.
Yeah, it's nice to get some consistent, fast ground for a change.
Yes, absolutely. And we saw yesterday at Leopardstown, Andrew, a couple of potential Aidan O'Brien, I say superstars. They're only two-year-olds at this point in time. But Churchill and Douglas MacArthur have catapulted themselves to the forefront of the betting for next year's Classics. We go 8-1 about Churchill behind Caravaggio for the 2,000 guineas. And it's 16-1 for both Churchill and Douglas MacArthur for next year's Derby. It's obviously very early to be talking about the 2017 Classics, but a couple of nice two-year-olds perhaps on Aidan O'Brien's hands again.
Yes, indeed. And I was particularly impressed with Promise to Be True. And that was a good time for that Group 3 win last night at Leopardstown over 7 furlongs. And quick and smartly, from off the pace. And it looked like the front runner was going to nick it at one stage. And I think did particularly well to win so comfortably in the end off that slow gallop, and looks a horse with the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else caught the eye from Thursday's action?
Yeah, Churchill, obviously. I thought he was in trouble coming around the home bend when, at one stage he looked like he wasn't going to get a run, and again, it was a fairly slowly run affair. It looked like the front runner was going to take it. And then, but I was very impressed with Alexios Kononos, I think it is.
Yeah, the second horse.
The runner-up, Tommy Stacks. This one had only had the one run going into that particular race, and had won at the Curragh, beating Inca Gold. Was 50-1 that day, so obviously a great deal wasn't expected. And was green and all at sea at one stage in that Leopardstown race on Friday, but on Thursday even, and sort of flew down the outside at the finish and only went down by a neck behind Churchill. So it'd be interesting to see what would happen to the pair if they met next time. But I'd certainly take Alexios Kononos from Thursday's action, as well as Churchill and the other O'Brien runner, Promised to Be True.
Mm. Yeah, plenty of notebook horses then come out of that that Leopardstown meeting, that is for sure. We're not far away from Glorious Goodwood, of course, coming up in the next few days. We always seem to get good weather for Glorious Goodwood, as we should do in the middle of high summer, but I can't remember a rainy one.
I can remember one once when I was working there as a bookmaker in the Silver Ring. And,
that's why you remember.
I'd got a new suit, which was ruined after a couple of days.
All right, but it looks a superb week of racing again, in particular the Sussex Stakes, which is usually a belting renewal. It looks like a rematch of the three guineas winners. They obviously all met at Royal Ascot, Galileo Gold, the Gurkha and Ortard. Galileo Gold came out on top on that particular occasion, and he's 7-4 to confirm that form. The Gurkha 15-8, 7-1 for Ortard. There'll be a lot of people, Andrew, who watched the run at Royal Ascot and thought, under a slightly worse ride from Frankie Dettori, a slightly better ride from Ryan Moore, then the Gurkha would have got to Gallo Gold, and plenty of people will see that 15-8 as value for the Sussex Stakes.
Yeah, it was a brilliant ride from Dettori that day, and sort of keen in the early stages, sat just off the pace and then quickened at the right route time, and perhaps caught Ryan Moore napping a little bit. And although it's sometimes frowned upon when you criticise the great man, but
yeah.
He can't get it right all the time. He is human, believe it or not. And I thought Autard was, probably came out best from that race, given that he was given plenty to do by Chris Hayes. And I think I'd perhaps take that one of the three.
Okay.
Given he'll be the bigger price, I presume.
Yeah, by far and away the biggest price. 7-1 for Autard, with Gallo Gold 7-4 and the Gurkha 15-8. So Autard's at least an each way price for that event as well, Sussex Stakes. I saw in the paper today connections of Ribchester talking up his chances. A decent horse in his own right, but does he look the quality of the three horses at the head of affairs, the Godolphin Runner?
Probably not is the question, but the Godolphin Runners are doing pretty well at the moment, and it's going to be the first time on fast ground, you would imagine, as well, assuming we do get a prolonged dry spell. That Ascot win over 7 furlongs came on soft ground, and of course he was third in the Guineas on good to soft, so has avoided ground quicker than good throughout his career, and never won on anything faster than good to soft, so that would be the main concern at the moment.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Anything else you're particularly looking forward to for the Goodwood meeting upcoming?
Big Orange,
yes.
If you bid to follow up last year's Goodwood Cup win. Another good win from the front at Newmarket last time under James McDonald. And that was a cracking race last year, and hopefully you can see him repeat that win.
He is 7-2 for the Goodwood Cup. It is Big Orange head of Palisator at 7-1. Kirby Enthusiasm and Quest for More at 8, and it's 10-1. Bar those for the Goodwood Cup. He's picked up some nice rides and had some nice results, James McDonald, while he's been filling in for the suspended Mr. Buick.
Yeah, he's flying. I tipped him up in the last race at Doncaster on Thursday, and I was impressed by the way he rode that race, because you've got to come from off the pace on the round course, ideally, at Doncaster. He sat out the back, didn't panic, and brought him through down the middle of the track to win going away.
Yeah, it's been a very profitable spell in the UK for James McDonald, that is for sure. We're going to move ahead now, though, to take a look at some of Saturday's racing. As I said, two really cracking meetings from both Ascot and York. We'll be previewing races from both, including the feature race of the day, the King George the VI and Queen Elizabeth Stakes. That comes up at 4:30. We'll get to that race in due course, but we begin with a Fillies Group 3 at Ascot. This is the 2:45, the Princess Margaret Stakes. 6 furlongs ahead of these 13 runners that stand their ground, and all eyes will be on Fair Eva, of course, daughter of Frankel, and he's just made a blistering start to his career as a sire, Frankel.
Yeah, absolutely, and this one added to those gains when bolting up by 4 lengths in a maiden at Haydock back in June, beating Nations Alexander into second. And of course, that one franked the form by winning a listed race next time and then finishing a close third in the Cherry Hinton behind Roly Poly at 16-1. The third, Miss Infinity, won her next two starts. And the time of the race was good and the form looks pretty solid. Slight concern about a lack of experience. I think it's only two of the last 11 winners of this particular race had only raced the one time. And she's odds on. So much as I respect her, I think I'd rather back something without the favourite or each way at a bigger price.
And which horse would you land on then? I was just having a little look at the previous history. I'm sure I don't need to tell you this, but 4 of the last 5 winners have come out of box 1, and that would be the Aidan O'Brien horse, How, who's had a couple of good seconds, still a maiden after 4 races. But is there anything in that draw bias for you, or is it just coincidence?
Well, it's funny, I hadn't noticed that at all.
Really?
Actually, so I bow to you, your superior stat knowledge. So.
I never thought there'd be a day where I'd be able to tell you something about stats.
Outstatted by a youngster.
Yeah, indeed.
the shame. But the thing I was looking at was how well the Cherry Hinton, how good a guide that is. And even when we've had shock winners of this race, like Princess Noor in 2013, a 25-1 shot for Roger Varian. And that one had raced in the Cherry Hinton, finishing the Duchess of Cambridge Stakes. It was that. Basically, you're looking for something with group form at Ascot or the Newmarket July meeting. And the one I came down on was Magical Fire, ridden by Jamie Heffernan this time, and after going close in the Cherry Hinton under Comal Donoghue, and that was an impressive run because Newmarket July course generally favours horses that are up with the pace, particularly on fast ground. Roly Poly, the 6-1 winner, was described as with leader. The third, Nations Alexander, who we mentioned earlier, was described as press leading pair, and the fourth, Kilmer, made the running. And the only one to make ground off the pace to finish in the first four was the runner-up Magical Fire. It was 33-1 that day, held up well off the pace in midfield. And that was only the second time she's encountered fast ground. The other was when winning a Fairy House Maiden. She was getting closer to Roly Poly than she had at the Curragh the time before on yielding ground. And I think she's going the right way. You can upgrade that Newmarket performance. I think she's underrated because she was 33-1 that day. And at around about 8-1, I think she's the each-way bet in the race, or the bet without Fair River.
Okay, Magical Fire then for Michael O'Callaghan, and Jamie Heffernan is the choice in the Ascot 245. It was third Ascot now for their next race. This is the 355, the International Stakes Heritage Handicap here over at 7 furlongs. Just the 26 runners to sort out here, Andrew. What'll it be?
Yeah, where's my lucky pin?
Yeah, where do you start would be a better question.
This is the kind of race I love. I'd much rather get stuck into something like this than a five-runner group race.
Right,
with odds
okay.
on favourite. So, I mean, there's been a glut of recent big prize winners in this particular race, and but even so, they were tended to be 4 or 5 year olds, the last 10 winners, and they brought some solid recent form to the table as well. Al Muhir won this at 40-1 in 2009, but had run second at Royal Ascot just a month earlier. And Mark Johnson's had two recent big price winners, Galician at 33-1 and Heavy Metal at the same price, but both won their prep races in 2013 and 2014. So it's not as though those wins came from nowhere. Also, the draw is very important in big field 7 furlong handicaps at Ascot. We've only had 18 of them since the draw was reversed in 2011, featuring 22 or more runners. And 11 of the 18 were won by horses drawn in stalls 21 or higher. Now, if you put a pound on every runner drawn 21 plus in these races, you'd have made over £110 to a £1 stake.
So, wow.
Massive profits there. And fortunately, my anti-post pick, Brazos, is drawn very high, drawn 21. This one, trained by James Tate, wears the same colours as the 2009 winner. He's finished well held in this race twice before, but was the only three-year-old in the lineup when he was down the field in 2014. And last year, he raced with just three others on his side of the track and was clear best of those. That was on unsuitably soft going. On faster ground, I expect high numbers to be favoured, and he returned to form with a narrow win at Doncaster last week. And even with a penalty, he looks well handicapped on his old form for Clive Britton. So from stall 21, Brazos, at around about 12-1, I think, is a confident selection.
Yeah, good case made then for Brazos in that race. James Tate and Andrea Atzani combining on that one. We move to the feature race of the day now then, and the showpiece on Ascot's car. This is the 430, the King George VI and Queen Elizabeth Stakes, a group one over a mile and a half. Just 7 runners line up for this one, and after the absence of Postponed, who's been ruled out of the race, we go 9-4 about Dartmouth at the head of affairs, ahead of Highland Reel, who's next in the betting. And with Postponed coming out, it's blown the race wide open, obviously, and almost made it look a bit more of a modest group one than it was with Postponed in.
A bit like a handicap, basically.
It looks like an okay group three.
They say you don't get bad group one races, but as you say, it certainly had some of the shine taken off of it with Postponed's absence. Dartmouth, a winner at Royal Ascot last time, is now 3 from 3 this season, all in small fields, and the last two wins narrowly. And we was 10-1 when beating Highland Reel by a head here last time, the pair pulling clear. And of course, the runner-up dropped his whip under Jamie Heffernan that day. Ryan Moore takes over in the saddle this time, and I just think that could be enough to see him reverse the form. And it's also interesting to note the form of Sir Michael Stout's runners in the last fortnight. He's had 26 runners, one winner, a 6-4 favourite who scored by a short head. So it's a relatively sort of small sample size for this time of year, but it is slightly worrying to see how many short price favourites he's had beaten into second or third in the last couple of weeks. So I was going to go with Highland Reel to reverse the form.
Okay, Highland Reel then to get the better of Dartmouth on this occasion. The Globetrotter Highland Reel is the choice for Andrew. We move on then to a race at York now, the final race on today's podcast, the 3:35. This is the York Stakes, a Group 2 over a mile and a quarter. Five runners line up, and of the quintet, all eyes will be on Time Test, who gets his beloved fast ground at York. Is there any opposing the Roger Charlton horse?
Yes.
Yes, good, good.
Yeah, absolutely. Odds on favourites, small field group races, needs to come from off the pace. I mean, countermeasures in there to make the running, but you know, it might be a case of him being ignored. Although it was a great idea to run him in the Eclipse, because he finished fourth and picked up 28,000 quid for doing so, which
very nice.
Fair play for an 81 rated handicapper. Time Test was only third in that particular race. You can blame the soft ground, but you know, he's had a few short price defeats in his time, and you know, the only time he's raced at York before over course and distance last year, he finished fourth, beating almost five lengths, you know, seven runner field when a 4-1 shot. So there's a slight doubt about the track being you know, completely suitable for him. And we talked about the profile of previous winners. You look at this race, six of the last seven winners of this were aged five or older, only one four-year-old. You had a seven-year-old last year, Tullius, at 10-1. We've had 3 6-year-olds recently, 5-2, 8-1, and 12-1. So it's not always been a race for the favourites. Although Mokadram did win it at 9-4 on a few years ago. So I'm going to sort of put up one against it at a bigger price, which is Mondial East, which is aside from the pacemaker, the outsider of the field. I think it's around about 10-1. And this one only beat a couple home at Ascot last time, but that was on soft ground. And Ascot, a bit like Chelmsford, is a track that doesn't suit a lot of horses. And you look at his previous runs at Ascot, he was 6-4 favourite, beaten six lengths into third, well beaten into 14th of 30 in the, I think it was the Britannia last year. No, sorry, it would have been the Royal Hunt Cup. And then again, that poor effort last time out. This time last year, he bounced back to form after a poor Ascot run to rattle off a hat-trick, winning on fast ground at Pontefract, winning here at York over 1 mile, 1 furlong, and then, winning at Woodbine. So, you know, this could be his time of year. Forget the Ascot run. A track he's run well at before. Mondial East for David O'Mara, 10-1. That'll do for me.
Andrew putting up Mondial East then via the, dare I say it, Ascot flop system?
Absolutely, yeah.
Patent pending?
Yeah.
Whether or not it'll rise to the fame of the Johnson flop system, we'll see. Just give us a quick recap then, please, Andrew, of your four picks for the action on Saturday.
Okay, 2:45 at Ascot, the Group 3 fillies race. I'm going for Magical Fire each way against the odds-on favourite Fair Eva. Then we're off to 3:55 in the 7 furlong international stakes, where Brazos, from a good draw in stall 21, is a confident pick, despite the size of the field. Also at Ascot and the King George, I'm going for Highland Reel to reverse Royal Ascot form with the stout runner Dartmouth. And finally, we're up to York, the 3:35. I'm taking on the short price Jolly Time Test with Mondial East.
Excellent stuff. There we are then, thoughts of Andrew Mount ahead of the racing at Ascot and York on Saturday. Remember to tune into Racing Radio from 1:40 p.m. where Luke Elder, James Millman and Rory Delaghi will have those two meetings covered alongside Chester, Newmarket and Newcastle in the afternoon, Lingford and Salisbury in the evening. Plenty to come. Do stick with us on Racing Radio on Saturday. Thanks for that, Andrew, and enjoy the action.
Cheers, Sam.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.